The following is a production of Art Trap Productions, brought to you by the Gallifreyan Embassy and has been made possible by supporting subscribers and donations from listeners like you. This episode also brought to you by Dragon's Lair Comics and Fantasy at dlair.net. Live from atop of a luggage rack of a Volkswagen Type 2 bus, it's Doctor Who Podshock.
Doctor Who Podshock.
Okay, well, let's do it
now. I
don't know, whatever it is, if it's valuable, send it to us.
For the best in all things Doctor Who, it's Doctor Who Podshock, the podcast all about Doctor Who, the longest-running science fiction television program, with Lewis Trapani.
Hello.
Ken Deep.
Hello.
James Norton.
Hello.
News.
Fabulous.
Reviews.
Oh, no.
And fan mail for James.
Over 40,000.
Doctor Who Podshock from the Gallifreyan Embassy.
You know, that guy James was really cool. Oh, yeah, we blew that.
I'm the Doctor, and who are you? And who are you?
The Gallifreyan Embassy, celebrating 25 years, a quarter of a century of time and space. It's Doctor Who Podshock, episode 202, or 202. Gonna have to get used to that. That whole 200 thing. Well, speaking of 200, yes, a couple episodes ago, we had our 200th episode, and, well, as least as far as the numbering system goes on our episodes, because we actually had about 200 episodes several months ago, but be that as it may, we have been getting a lot of accolades from episode 200 from listeners and other podcasters alike, and we want to thank everyone for their acknowledgement. We are very honored and humbled by it all. What we're really excited about is that this is our 25th anniversary year of the Gallifreyan Embassy, and it's also our fifth year for Doctor Who Podshock, and we hope to do special shows on each, or maybe we'll do a combination show on both of them. So that's what we're looking forward to do during the summer. So if you have any ideas, maybe something, I mean, we got some things that we're working on, and but we are always open to new ideas and fresh minds and fresh thinking. If there's something that you'd like to hear that we haven't done already, and let us know. For our 25th anniversary and 5th anniversary of Doctor Who Podshock. But to that point, this message came in shortly after episode 201 went out, or 201, or 201.
This is Davros. It has come to my attention that Doctor Who Podshock has reached 200 episodes. This is extremely annoying. I have been recording Skyrocast for over 100 episodes myself, and still only have an audience of 10, and 5 of those are Daleks.
Sorry about that. He's always sneaky into my studio when I'm not looking. But seriously, Lou, thank you for all your work on Podshock for the past 200 episodes, for your wonderful, measured and friendly approach, for Ken Deep and his passionate, if sometimes factually inaccurate, rants, and for James Norton, of course, for being the bloke from Yorkshire, the voice of reason. So congratulations, and here's to the next 200 episodes from all of us at Tim's Take On. Yes, that'll be just me, and, well, sometimes Davros when he gets in my studio.
Ah, thank you, Tim. That's Tim Drury of Tim's Take On podcast. He's also does another podcast called Living the Second Life, which ties into our seasonal meetups that we have there. He was just at our Second Life meetup this past Saturday. We had a grand old time there. But thank you very much. That was a great message there with Davros. Wow. Some real creative messages we got acknowledging episode 200. And, well, maybe that's what we'll ask for. Maybe for our 25th anniversary and 5th anniversary of Doctor Who Podshock, maybe we'll solicit some feedback from you, something that you'd like to chime in with or something, perhaps. And I would like to chime in myself with some kudos to Barnaby Edwards of Who York and DWNY for a lovely evening this Sunday night, this past Sunday, in Manhattan for Who York's event with Sylvester McCoy. It was a lovely affair. Unfortunately, due to our live recording, actually for this show that you're going to be hearing out right now, our live show reviewing Amy's Choice. I missed most of what Sylvester had to say scheduling-wise, but Ken was there. He had a good time. So was Billy Davis, a.k.a. the White Robot, was there. And Taras Natishan was there. Anthony S. Burge and Jessica Burke were there. All familiar voices from Doctor Who Podshock. There were many others there. It was standing room only, sold-out event. But we'll have more about this event in a future episode. But speaking of New York City, Doctor Who Podshock will be back in the city this Thursday. Oh, fiddlesticks, right? Now, we're going to be at Fiddlesticks Pub and Grill for the launch party of the Mythological Dimensions of Doctor Who, which is a new book with the aforementioned Anthony S. Burge, Jessica Burke, Christine Larson, Barnaby Edwards, and Melody Green will all be there. Joining them is Doctor Who Podshock, that is Ken Deep and myself. We'll be recording there for a future episode. The festivities start at 7 p.m. Fiddlesticks Pub and Grill, which is 56 Greenwich Avenue, New York, New York. For more information, go to our website, thegallifreyanimacy.org, or podshock.net on the front page there. At least it's on the front page up until Thursday, until after Thursday. Well, you still can find out about it, but you won't be able to attend unless you have a functioning TARDIS, which I know some of you out there do have a TARDIS or two. Whether it's functioning or not is another matter. Hope to see you there. So in this episode, we review Amy's Choice, which is the latest Doctor Who episode that just came out of the BBC this past Saturday. And if you haven't seen it yet, please, as always, save this episode of Doctor Who Podshock until you have. Now, because of the Who York event, it was a very limited show. We could only record for, actually, it was just under an hour, our live show. And because I had to stop everything and rush over to the train and get into the city. And, well, long story short, it was, as I said, I missed most of the Sylvester McCoy part, but I got to, you know, enjoy the rest of the evening there. And as I mentioned, Ken was traveling to the event during the recording, so obviously Ken was not in our live show. So since it was an abbreviated show somewhat, there might have been some people in the queue or people that wanted to get in the queue that didn't because they knew it was going to be a short show, so their feedback was not included. So as always, if you don't make it into the live show, you can always send us your feedback, record your feedback, and send it to us either using the Doctor Who Podshock public call box. And to do that, you just simply call our public call box phone number, which is 206-600-6517. Once again, that's 206-600-6517. We don't charge you anything for it, but it's a 206 area code, which I believe is in Washington State in the U.S., so just be aware of that if your phone service has any charges for calling 206. Or you can record your feedback and email it to feedback@podshock.net. In our last episode, when we reviewed Vampires of Venice, one such review came in through our feedback line, and unfortunately, I failed to include it in the show. So, before we get into Amy's Choice, let's backtrack one episode back to Vampires of Venice. So if you haven't seen Vampires of Venice either, you know, spoiler warning here. Graham Sheridan, our correspondent in Germany, he sent us his review of The Vampires of Venice.
Hello, it's Graham, the Second Doctor here. Sorry I couldn't make it. Well, work got in the way as usual. So here's my review of Vampires in Venice. Now, the first thing that really springs to mind when I think about watching this episode, as I have many times already, is that the music is absolutely on point again. I'm not used to this, so I was absolutely dumbfounded and flabbergasted, as you could say in old English, as to how good the music and how well the music fitted to the scenes that have been shown. Helen McCrory's acting was, as usual, on form and a little bit above. anybody who watches The Confidentials, the guy who plays her son in this, Alex, that's his real name anyway, will notice that he is actually the voice for the Doctor Who Confidentials as well. The Doctor is totally on form at his and at his top of his game, as usual. There was a bit I absolutely loved, harking back to the classic series, and I'm not on about the Doctor's photo on his library card. I'm on about the bit where Rory gets told by Amy, I'll explain later, which harkens back to what the Fifth Doctor often said to Tegan and Nyssa. Details I've also noticed is that if you're looking for the crack, you really have to have your finger on the pause button. It doesn't appear as such, but there is a scene where lightning strikes along the sky, and, well, lo and behold, it's slightly lightning-looking, but it definitely looks like the crack. The other point is the big pointy teeth agenda that seems to be going on. There, towards the end of the story, Helen McCrory's character is stood on a bell tower, and she had a hand on a battlement, and to her right, our left, there was a little stone statue of what I call an anglerfish, and that's that one from the deep water in the Atlantic. It has that funny little light dangling from its head, and the same sort of teeth that Prisoner Zero has. Now, at that time, at the around about 1580s, where it's supposed to take place, they wouldn't have known about this, so I'll take this as another clue. Otherwise, it was a brilliant, fantastic little adventure, and sparkled from beginning to the end. I know there are people out there that will probably be a little bit disgruntled with this, but as far as I've heard so far, the Sixth Doctor actually liked this one. That's all I've got for now. Bye-bye.
Well, thank you, Graham, and as always, your little segments are sort of like a podcast within a podcast, so thank you so much for that. And I do apologize for not getting your review in our last episode. You did get it in on time. It was just my absent-mindedness that failed to include it in the show in post-production. So speaking of absent-minded, I didn't forget that we're here to actually review Amy's Choice. So let's go to a live show in which we review Amy's Choice, live over the net.
Alarm. I've never had a baby before.
Leaf blowers. Use a rake.
No, it's... I knew. I just knew.
Rory!
Doctor!
You're huge!
Yeah, I'm pregnant.
5 years later and you haven't changed a bit apart from age and size.
Oh, it's good to see you, Doctor.
Where is everyone?
This is busy. Really restful and healthy. Lots of people around here live well into their 90s.
Well, I wanted to see how you were. You know me, I don't just abandon people when they leave the TARDIS. Oh, thank God, I had a terrible nightmare about you two. Never dropped off like that before. Well, never, really. I'm getting on a bit, you see. Don't let the cool gear fool you. Now, what's wrong with the console? Red flashing lights. I bet they mean something.
Doctor, I also had a kind of dream.
Yeah, so did I.
We were married.
Yeah, in a little village.
Yeah, sweet little village, and you were pregnant.
Yes, I was huge.
So you had the same dream then? So you were visiting?
Yeah, you came to our cottage.
How can we have had exactly the same dream? It doesn't make any sense.
And you had a nightmare about us. What happened to us in the nightmare?
It was a bit similar in some aspects.
Which aspects?
Well, all of them.
You had the same dream.
Basically. We all had some kind of psychic episode. We probably just jumped a time track or something.
Forget it. We're back to reality now.
Doctor, if we're back to reality, how come I can still hear birds?
Well, sorry, not at all. Stupid God, I must be overdoing it. I was dreaming we were back on the TARDIS.
You just had the same dream, didn't you?
Back in the TARDIS. Weren't we just saying the same thing?
Doctor, what is going on?
Is this because of you? Is this some time lordy thing because you've shown up again?
Listen to me. Trust nothing. From now on, trust nothing you see, hear or feel.
But we're awake now.
Yeah, you thought you were awake on the TARDIS too.
But we're home.
Yeah, you're home. You're also dreaming. Trouble is, Rory, Amy, which is which? Are we flashing forwards or backwards? Hold on tight. This is going to be a tricky one.
And this is going to be Doctor Who Podshock, presented by the Gallifreyan Embassy, celebrating 25 years. This is Lewis Trapani, and joining me on this live show is none other than James Norton across the pond. Hello, James.
Hello.
How are you?
Not so bad, mate. Yourself?
Hanging in there. As I said,
good, good.
A little frantic today. It's a busy day, but we're getting through it.
And, cool.
Joining forces with us is our regular superhero. He sometimes dons a cape, sometimes doesn't, but he always goes by the name of Dave A.C. Cooper. Hello, Dave.
Cooper Dave. How you doing, mate?
Yeah, and I've abandoned one of my sons, James, and I'm now Ken's surrogate father for the show.
That's right. Ken is not going to be with us on this show. He's traveling, which means he's traveling to the Sylvester McCoy event that's going on this evening, so which I'll be heading off to after this event. So, yeah, he's skipping the show to see the Seventh Doctor. Well, that's okay. Well, we're here to see Amy's Choice. Well, actually, assuming you've seen Amy's Choice already, and therefore spoilers are abound. So if you have not seen Amy's Choice yet, take this podcast and save it until you have, because we're not holding back. And if you continue listening, then it's your choice. So Amy's Choice, it was last night on BBC One. It's the seventh episode of the new series. It was written by Simon Nye and directed by Catherine Morshead. I believe both are new to Doctor Who, if I'm not mistaken. It's a different story than what we've seen already in this past, you know, the past six episodes. So it was takes a little different path. It opens up, well, 5 years later, as we are, you know, as we are led to believe, which is kind of interesting. And I think it was done very well. I think that it really pays off in the end with a wonderful conclusion, but as with every episode, there's lots of wonderful dialogue in here. That whole sequence with the doctor referring to the dream as a nightmare, whereas of course Rory sees it as something other than a nightmare at first, and it was basically his dream there. So, and that's what this whole story is about: is what is reality, what is dream, and where, you know, this is coming from. It's an exploration of the characters somewhat more, you know, going into the dream world. And I think they did it very well. Love the TARDIS interior. You know, we got to see a little bit more of that. Seeing it was almost a bottle episode, but you know, half of it was, at least. In fact, I sort of had taken back when I saw the TARDIS all covered with ice like that. It was just like, oh my god. Then we see it spanking clean shortly after that, and but it's such a mammoth set, that new TARDIS interior. And the more we see it, the more I'm loving it. Just the way it is, it really does exemplify how it's bigger on the inside, where the previous one was short, was bigger than what we've seen in this TV series of old, but it was we already seen that room, and it didn't really, you know, outside of the wardrobe room and characters disappearing off the set, we didn't really see it being that complex or that big. Here, you can't help it, because there's corridors and walkways going every which way. The music, I thought Murray Gold did a wonderful job. It was a very, there was throughout the whole, in that clip that we just played, you could hear some of it right there, that whole uneasy music in that one, going into the dream, going from one dream to the other, not knowing, you know, it just puts you off ease. And I thought he did a wonderful job with that. Once again, a nice musical touch with Rory's death, even though I don't know, I didn't really feel much for his death scene, because we've only, at least for myself, we only got introduced to the character really last episode. I mean, we got to see him in the 11th hour, but we didn't really get to know him that well. And so maybe, I don't know if this maybe this might have been done, this episode might have done better placed later in the series. I don't know. It was all right. I'm sort of kind of rushing through because I know we only have a limited amount of time. The aliens living in the old people, as far as the eyes and the coming at, you know, coming out of their mouths and all that, it's a bit gimmicky, but it's okay. It's all right. I'm going to give it 4 out of 5 TARDIS groans.
Cool.
James?
Yeah, well, I concur with everything that you said. I really enjoyed this one. I was rather skeptical when I saw the trailer from last week. I didn't quite know what to make of it with the Dream Lord and so on. And the trailers, to my mind, really haven't done justice to the episodes.
Mm.
The feel of the whole story was great, and I loved how this had all been set up since, you know, Amy's sort of throwing herself at the Doctor and then taking Rory on board in the TARDIS and sort of rekindling their relationship, but still really it being, you know, Amy having to choose between the Doctor and Rory. And it was very clever how, you know, it was obviously the Doctor's dream is being in the TARDIS, yeah, and traveling and, mm-hmm, and going everywhere and doing new wonderful things and not really caring and not having roots and, you know, always moving on. Whereas for Rory, you know, his dream was becoming a doctor and moving up in life and going to Upper Ledworth and marrying Amy and having a baby together and all the rest of it. And it was really touching that Amy had to make the choice. And when Rory died, she made the choice to, she was so shocked and upset, and she, that made her realize that Rory is who she's always going to choose. And the Doctor really being sort of powerless and quite, you know, shocked by it all and scared by the fact that how utterly angry and upset Amy is about, you know, Rory's death. And because I've grown a great affection for Rory anyway. He's a fantastic companion. The actor who plays him, Arthur Darvill, is brilliant. And he's got such great comic timing, and he's really the comic relief, isn't he, in all of this. And he's sort of like the twit, the sort of twerp who, you know, is on the sidelines. But, you know, he plays it very, very well. And you feel a lot of affection for him as a result. He's, you know, I do have a soft spot for Rory, and it's great to see a male companion for once instead of all these. Not that I've got anything against the ladies, but we've just seen so many. Not quite the opposite, of course, but we've seen so many.
I wish it wasn't so twerpish. That Mickey aspect of him, I wish was less so. I mean, I enjoyed the fact that he is a nurse. He and studying, you know, going to as far as we know, in medical school, you know, from 11th hour. And you know, there's some intelligence there because he's able to pick up on stuff about the Doctor and doesn't hold back pointing these things out either, and you know, when push comes to shove, he, you know, he'll pick up a stick and hit an old lady as well. So I mean, yeah. I like that aspect of him, but I just sometimes I wish I'd just downplay the twerpish aspect of it, you know.
Sure,
that whole,
but I mean,
Mickey thing,
like,
that we've seen before.
As with Mickey was sort of, again, played a similar sort of role, but it was more so, he was more of a twerp. It took him a lot longer time to sort of come out of his shell.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, Rory last week, he surprised and shocked the Doctor with really sort of intelligence, despite being a bit of a twerp, really.
Yeah, well, that's what I like about him, is that.
Yeah, he's bringing something else to it, and the Doctor brings the best. I've always loved the fact that the Doctor brings the best out of everybody. You know, Rose, before she met the Doctor, was just a girl in the shop, and, you know, she never had any aspirations or dreams, or she didn't really think that she could do anything with her life. And the Doctor came and changed all that. The same with Mickey. Mickey was just a twerp, an idiot, you know, never really having any self-confidence or, you know, anything of the sort. And the Doctor steps in and, you know, he brings the best out in people. And that's what I think we're going to see with Rory. I just was thinking that it was a very clever reflection of Amy in terms of Rory's dream and the Doctor's dream and who she should sort of pick.
Mm-hmm.
I quite like the old people alien monster villain. That was quite cool, and I liked that they blatantly didn't spend a great deal of money on this episode, and still it came off as a great written story. I think I love the way that they dressed up the set of the TARDIS. Really, they didn't spend a great deal of money, and they didn't have CGI aliens all over the place, which I much prefer, because I wasn't such a huge fan last week of the, you know, with
well,
the
even
vampire.
Here, the whole, like, the mouth stuff was obviously CGI, and I think they could have even gotten away without doing that and just had them, you know, hold, you know, having maybe other weapons or whatever, or...
Sure.
I mean, it was okay. It wasn't a deal breaker or anything like that. It just to me, I think. In the end, it was a dream anyway, so it didn't really matter.
Sure, but the CGI anyway, I felt wasn't sort of over the top. Really, I thought it was nicely in tune. Whereas the vampires, not that there was much CGI in that either, but the CGI that there was over the top, and it was a little outlandish for me, and it wasn't really believable for me that these were fish, and it just seemed a bit daft, really. I could tell that they'd done their best, and, you know, they've only got a limited budget and so on, but this time around it was really nice, and nice to see a bit more of Ledworth as well, and great to see, you know, the whole interplay between the Doctor, Rory, and Amy.
Mm-hmm. And again, lots of wonderful pieces of dialogue there.
Yeah, and the Dream Lord, played by Toby Jones, I thought was hilarious. He was ever so funny as soon as he stepped on from start to finish. I kind of figured out that it was the Doctor himself, particularly with the line of, oh, you know, there's only one person in the universe who could hate me as much as you do, sort of a thing. I twigged by that point that it was the Doctor, but I didn't kind of understand, well, obviously, how could you until the very end, of what was going on, that both were dreams. But it was very clever, and I particularly, you know, enjoyed that, and it was kind of cool to see that whilst the Doctor figured out that it was the darker side of himself, you know, trying to figure out how to get out of the dream and what's real and what's not. So I completely concur. I love the episode. I'd give it sort of 4 out of 5 myself, TARDIS Groans. There's not really much you can say about it, really, because there's not... really much in the way of special effects or, you know, other than the fact that I think they did a great job with the old people, and they did a great job dressing up the TARDIS. My one criticism, though, on that point is I didn't like the whole, you know, cold star thing, but they had to go with something outlandish to make it, you know, feel like a dream. And even the Doctor says, oh, you know, all this dream or this cold star nonsense doesn't make any sense, you know. Which I liked, but I don't know. I thought they could have gone with something a little bit more, I don't know, realistic, instead of if they'd just made it a star and the temperature getting hotter or something instead of getting colder. I don't know.
Well, I guess maybe they were exploring the aspect of sometimes we dream stuff that's completely unreal and yet we accept
exactly.
it in a dream, you know, even though
exactly.
in waking conscious we know it's absurd, but, you know, we accept
sure.
it in a dream.
Sure.
I think maybe that's what they were going after.
It seemed a little bit too outlandish and made me realize, well, it's got to be a dream.
Well, also, it might have led the audience to believe too easily that the TARDIS was reality, you know, and I guess they wanted to throw in something that would be absurd to make the audience think that, this could very well be a dream as well.
Yeah.
So, I think some tones in this episode they touched upon very well. A bit reminiscent of Invasion of the Body Snatchers there with the old people going after everyone in town.
Yeah.
And,
I thought that was really funny.
There's a scene with one old woman holding a lawnmower above her head, you know, going into the house. it's just, I just love that imagery, and you hear it too. And it's just so funny. Yeah.
No, Simon Nye really did a great job, and quite surprising, really, given that, you know, he has written for a lot for television before, and you can tell that he's a sort of a comic television writer, He's written things before like Men Behaving Badly, most famously, a huge comedy over here in the UK back in the 90s. It was hugely popular. You can really tell that he's got a great sense of humour and that he picks up on these things. So there was a lot in this episode that made me laugh and giggle, and that's one of the reasons why I like it so much.
Yeah.
Anyway, Dave.
As I joked to Ian before he got the joke in first, I can go to a convention now without having to wear makeup. I'll be one of the scary old people.
Stop that, Dave.
Anyway, I agreed with you in a lot of that. I didn't put it quite as high, but having listened to the audio quite some times over, it's growing on me. I thought more like a 3.5 to 4 at first, but I think it's more like a 4.
While watching it, I was giving it like a 3.5 until the resolution and we find out who the Dream Lord is, and I think that bumped it up to a 4 for me. I'm so glad it wasn't the Master or some other villain or whatever. I'm so glad they played it the way they played it, and I think it worked very well.
Yeah, I wasn't thinking the Master. I did think it might be the Celestial Toymaker at one point, but it reminded me also of the very early story, Edge of Destruction, somewhat.
Mm-hmm.
So that was one thing that it reminded me of. I thought it was actually slightly more scary than the Angels story, because I thought there are aspects of this that were quite frightening. As you said, I think it was done economically, because, I mean, they showed Rory changing into dust, but all those children, we just cut to them and they'd already disappeared. So, they saved a lot on effects. However, there was enough there to hang the story on in terms of effects. I think the thing about Rory is that he was drippy to start with, because if you remember, there was such a lot of news about Karen becoming the new companion. I think it was a bit of misdirection here, that, there was no way pointing towards the fact that Rory was going to end up in the TARDIS. Even last week, he started to show some little bits of metal. He noticed that the Doctor, makes people do brave things.
Mm-hmm.
He also thanked the Doctor
for... puts their lives at risk doing it.
That's right. And also, in this dream aspect, the Doctor says to Rory, oh, yes, you marry the girl you want, you become a doctor, you're living in an upmarket little village, this is your little cosy dream. But he conversely says to the Doctor, oh yes, the TARDIS about to crash into a sun, only you can save the world, Johnny Brigg. That famous little kid's story? Only you can save mankind. So he's got the Doctor tagged a little bit with that. I thought the cold sun, it did throw you a wobbly, but I thought it was more of a skit, James, on the, you remember that idea of coal fusion that we had a few years back? I thought that was that. But I think Lewis's explanation is better, the fact that people will say, well, obviously the TARDIS is real. We've been following it for 47 years. So they had to put something in there to think, if it was the TARDIS, was this a real adventure within the TARDIS? And of course, this Amy's Choice was played on 3 times. It was the Amy's Choice with the Dream Master. There was Amy's Choice whether she wanted to choose Rory or the Doctor. And the third Amy's Choice was where they were going to go at the end. But I'm going to keep it brief because there are people in the queue, but I think it's one of these episodes that will grow. I think also it's one of those episodes that you could introduce the Doctor to people with, because I know some people will say that this leads up to characterisation and development of character, but it's about one of the only episodes up to now that you could take out of the series and probably somebody could make sense of it, or perhaps it would get them intrigued. Perhaps it would put them off. I don't know.
Well, the whole Dream Lord character gives great insights on the Doctor and what he says about his companions and how he just leaves them and never, they're not really friends, and how he only picks young people. And it's about growing up as well, because Rory has a line like, oh, we all have to grow up sometime. And Amy says, not necessarily, or something along those lines. And then later on in that episode, we hear it again between the Dream Lord and the Doctor, about, having companions before they, until they grow up.
Right. And the little device that was used, a little see things or whatever that psychic, you know, he blows those out of the TARDIS, but then we come back and we see the reflection again, so we may see this character again. But I think all in all, it's one of those episodes that will grow on me. But so I'm heading towards a 4, I think, and I'll hand back to you, Lewis.
Well, the other, I was talking about, there's lots of wonderful bits of dialogue in here, and there are. The only thing that I might have changed was in the very opening scene where the doctor says, explains, it's 5 years later, and here you know, and you're, what did you swallow a planet or something like that? And I thought maybe it might have worked better if, just to kind of play along with what they were doing with the 11th hour, if the doctor came and said, oh, you know, it's 2 years later or 3 years later, and then Amy corrects him, saying, no, it's 5 years later, because, you know, that whole beat that was going on in the 11th hour where he kept on thinking it was earlier than, you know, or in that Amy was correcting him that it was later than he thought or whatever.
Yeah. I don't think we actually saw any cracks in it. I don't think I've heard anybody mention
it. Yeah, there was. I think this was the first episode that there was no reference to the crack, you know, outside of, you know.
But we had the eyeballs in, which have been featured a lot, looking through cracks on spaceships and so on. So the eyeball has been one of the other running things. But
well, that seems to be a, even though this wasn't a Stephen Moffat story, it seems to be a running thing with, you know, with Stephen Moffat.
Yep.
With the eye. We're going to continue with our live show very shortly. I just want to take a moment to thank a returning sponsor to Doctor Who Podshock, Dragon's Lair Comics and Fantasy. With stores in Austin and San Antonio, Texas, and now in Bellevue, Washington, they sell Doctor Who action figures, CDs, comics. They also sell board games, role-playing games, card games, graphic novels, manga, and a whole lot more. Check out their website at dlair.net. That's D as in dragon, lair.net. You can also visit them in person in the state of Texas. They have stores in Austin and San Antonio. And in Washington State, they have a new store that just opened, Bellevue, in Bellevue. Or check out their website, dlair.net. That's D as in dragon, lair.net. You can also give them a call at 512-454-2399. We welcome back Dragon's Lair Comics and Fantasy, and we thank them for their support. Check them out, dlair.net. Also returning this month is audible.com, the internet's leading provider of spoken audio entertainment, providing digital versions of tens of thousands of audiobooks to download to your computer, iPod, MP3 player. Listen to them whenever and wherever you like, just like you're listening to this podcast right now. Audible has over 50,000 titles to choose from. Every genre, Audible has it covered. That's over 80,000 hours of audio programs from 270 content partners that include leading audiobook publishers, broadcasters, entertainers, magazine and newspaper publishers, podcasters, and business information providers. Doctor Who Podshock listeners can get a free audiobook download when you sign up for a free trial today. Simply go to audiblepodcast.com/podshock to get your free audiobook today. And as always, we like to make a recommendation. You're free to choose whatever title you like, but we always like to give some suggestions. And to that end, you may recall, leading up to the regeneration of the 10th Doctor into the 11th Doctor, we've been doing a series of reviews of regeneration stories, one of which was the story Castro Valva, which was the first story featuring the 5th Doctor, Peter Davison. It's a story by Christopher H. Bidman, and it's available through Audible, and it's narrated by none other than Peter Davison himself. Let's hear a little bit of it right now. This picks up right after the regeneration of the 4th Doctor into the 5th Doctor.
"He's changing," said Adric. "The Doctor's regenerating." A cold, unfriendly morning had begun to whiten the sky beyond the high-wire perimeter. Tegan exchanged a glance with Adric and Nyssa, but none of the three friends dared to approach the Doctor. For inside that red ocean of greatcoat, festooned with a familiar long woolen scarf, the figure on the ground seemed so fragile as to be hardly there at all. They watched him struggle to sit up, and from that strangely smooth and vacant face they heard a voice that was not very like the Doctor's. But the sense of what he said was lost under the crisp intrusion of several pairs of footsteps running towards them across the tarmac. The long pin drop of silence shattered into confusion. In a moment, uniformed guards loomed over them, and above the clamour of the approaching ambulance, Tegan managed to hear, "These are secure premises. You lot have got some explaining to do." As if you could explain something like that to an inquisitor behind the visor of a security helmet. You'd have to retell the whole terrifying story of Legopolis and of the Doctor's last deadly struggle with the Master, perhaps his last forever, high up there on the Pharos transmission tower, in whose ominous shadow they now stood. The guard took hold of her arm, none too gently, to steer her out of the path of the approaching ambulance, while his two colleagues closed in around Adric and Nyssa. Still shattered by the Doctor's terrible fall, Tegan turned her anger on the guards. "Take your hands off me! This is an official uniform!" If she had a wild hope that they might somehow be impressed by her purple air hostess outfit, she was mistaken. Adric's tone was more reasonable. "Don't be silly," said the boy, trying to sound calm. "We want to help, but you can't take us away from the Doctor. Something may have gone wrong with his regeneration." The ambulance had drawn up beside them, like a white wall suddenly shutting them off from the Doctor. The driver jumped out and disappeared around the other side of the vehicle, and a man in a white coat emerged from the rear doors to follow him. The guards hustled the three companions against the side of the ambulance. "Arms up and lean on it. Come on, quick!" Swift, professional hands searched Nyssa and Adric for weapons. As it came to Tegan's turn, she noticed that by craning her head to the left, she could look through the windows of the driving cab to the patch of ground on the other side where the white-coated man was bent over the Doctor. The uniformed driver had returned to fetch a stretcher from the back of the vehicle. The guard concluded his search. "No weapons." "Of course not," Tegan snapped. "We're all perfectly harmless, unfortunately." Looking through the two windows of the driving compartment, she saw the ambulance men lifting the limp figure onto the stretcher. She closed her eyes tight, trying to shut out the reality of what was happening to the Doctor. After a fall from that height, it seemed impossible that he should live at all. And yet, just before the arrival of the guards, they'd all seen him open his eyes and reach out towards the shadows behind him, where his future had been waiting. "That surely must have been a dream," thought Tegan, remembering with a shudder the way the vague and luminous figure they had come to know as the Watcher had stepped out into the light, grasping the Doctor's hands and drawing closer and closer until their two shapes began to merge.
Wow. How exciting is that? I mean, I've seen Castrovalva so many times, but never like this. Wow. Incredible. And I love that little remark about when they were being searched by professional hands. Yes, great stuff. Great stuff. And this could be your selection at audible.com if you choose it. It could be anything that you choose. Get a free audiobook download when you sign up for a free trial today. Go to audiblepodcast.com/podshock to get your free audiobook. And it could be Castrovalva, or it, you can choose any of the other fine selections. They have lots of Doctor Who titles there. Doesn't have to be Doctor Who. Could be anything you like. But this is, I find this is a particularly gripping story here of the Fifth Doctor, his first story, Castrovalva, read by Peter Davison himself. It's unabridged, and it runs just under 4 hours. That's 3 hours and 52 minutes. So check it out, audiblepodcast.com/podshock. And if you didn't catch that URL, we have links to it on our website, thegallifreyanembassy.org or podshock.net. You can find links to it there. And we thank Audible.com for their support. Now let's return to our live show reviewing Amy's Choice. Did you hear the birds in that clip of Castrovalva, the audiobook? Every time I hear birds now, I think I'm going to switch realities or switch dreams, as it may be.
Okay.
All right. Well, we're going to get to people in the queue. Once again, Podshock supporting subscribers will be bumped up in the queue. We're going to play another clip that Dave put together for us so kindly.
We're in a dead time machine.
Someone, something is overriding my controls.
Well, that took a while.
How did you get into my TARDIS? What are you?
What should we call me? Well, if you're the Time Lord, let's call me the Dream Lord. So here's your challenge. Two worlds. Here, in the time machine, and there, in the village that time forgot. In both worlds, a deadly danger, but only one of the dangers is real.
What is that?
Star. Cold star.
Robin, freezing! It's not a heating malfunction! We're drifting toward a cold sun! There's our deadly danger for this version of reality!
So this must be the dream. There is no such thing as a cold star. Stars burn.
So this one is just burning cold.
Does that mean this is the dream?
I don't know.
Oh, then what are we going to do?
Because this just might be the battle that we have to lose.
Where are the children gone?
Doctor, what are you doing? And what are those piles of dust?
Playtime's definitely over.
Oh, my God.
Hello, Mr. Nameby.
Rory.
Mr. Nameby ran the sweet shop.
He used to slip me the odd free toffee.
How did he do that?
There's a whole creature inside her, inside all of them. They've been there for years, living and waiting.
You are Ethnodetes.
We were driven from our planet
by upstart neighbours.
So we've...
We're living here inside the bodies of old humans.
Now we will do the same to others.
Let's divide you three up so I can have a little chat with our lovely companion.
We'll be back.
Rory, Doctor, don't leave me.
Amy, we're going to have fun, aren't we? Pick a world, and this nightmare will all be over. They'll listen to you. It's you they're waiting for. Amy's men. Amy's choice.
Where did I get up here?
I carried you.
What are we going to do?
I don't know. I thought the freezing TARDIS was real, but now I'm not so sure.
Why are they so desperate to kill us?
They're scared. Fear generates savagery.
Mommy!
Look after our baby.
Save him. You save everyone. You always do. It's what you do.
Not always. Sorry.
Anybody thinking Adric at that point?
Well, what I was kind of confused was with how the Doctor realized that how old, you know, he made a reference to the old people being incredibly old and, you know, granted the Doctor sees things maybe a bit differently than we do, so I just didn't really grasp how he immediately knew that these older folks were older than they appear.
But it was his dream, after all. Perhaps it was Rory's dream, but yeah.
All right, let's get two people in the queue, and first up, as far as Podchuck supporting subscribers, is once again Helen. Hello, Helen. Welcome back.
Hey, guys. Oh, well.
Hey.
I had a fantastic time yesterday.
Oh, yeah. We had our meetup yesterday, and thank you for being there. We had a grand time.
Yes, Ian had a lot of fun with me, I think.
So, you were there for the TARDIS tours as well. We're talking about our seasonal meetup on Second Life that we do every 3 months. We'll be back there in August. So if you missed out this last time, which was yesterday, and we'll be back then. So, and we do Victor leads this tour on the TARDIS, and we go to other places on Second Life that are Doctor Who themed, and then we come back to the Doctor Who experience, the land of Katrina, and continue our party there with a whole dance party and all that.
And a little bit of problem with the music at the beginning again, but once I got that sorted out, it was fine. And then in the middle of the meet, suddenly I was trying to save an image and a photograph, and everything went crunch.
Are you using the latest software?
No, I can't, because I'm using, for some reason, the original software says it's not compatible, so I wasn't able to upgrade to the new.
Oh, all right. Okay.
So, it kind of strange since my computer is like almost, you know, just mid-class. I wouldn't say like top of the line, like a gaming machine, but it's got NVIDIA graphics and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. So what did you think of Amy's choice?
Oh, I loved it. I used to, a long time ago back in the 80s, I did a role play a long time ago where we did something very similar to that, where we had a waking world and a sleeping world, and we wasn't sure, like, which one was which. One was more fantasy, kind of like Avatar, and the other one was kind of more like real life, where they had actual jobs, and kind of like, in one life, I guess my character was a oceanographer, in a dream world, she was like a huntress or something like that, and I just thought the similarity between this and that were very, very interesting. But I really, really did like it, especially the fact that, yes, it did turn out that both were dreams. And as Dave pointed out, yes, you know, I brought up cold fusion for the sun, that it was quite possible that a star could burn cold.
Well, relatively cold. I mean, whether it would chill the TARDIS, we don't know. But the point is, it might not provide enough heat, and the TARDIS was down, so presumably, although it was near to the sun, it was basically, it could have been not the sun that was chilling it, just the fact that the TARDIS controls were down.
Well, yeah. Well, everything was shut off, so all security was shut down, and it must have been that life support part of it was shut down as well. So, because that's the only thing that can explain why the TARDIS cooled up so quickly. I mean, you remember, they're in sub-zero space also, so even if they're even close to a sun, that being in deep space like that would be, like, just too bitterly cold to imagine anyway.
Yeah, I think they were just trying to get something that you could see and feel and touch almost, you know, with this cold sun.
Where yeah.
The coldness of space doesn't... They wanted a threat, and that cold sun, as even though it doesn't make much scientific sense, was... you know, played that part as opposed
right.
to just having this ambiguous...
I did like the attraction between the three of them, Rory, Amy, and the Doctor, and the Dream Lord. And I thought, you know, that was, like, so cool. At first I was thinking, is this the Mind Robber? And I was like, that's interesting. And then it turned out to be himself as kind of like a prelude to maybe... turning into the Valyard. As we already know in Trial of a Time Lord that, well, there's one thing about the Valyard that people keep forgetting, and that's what that is, that the Valyard was being controlled by the Master. And,
Yeah, well, this was, I mean, it's a similar germ of an idea, you know, as far as the dark side of the Doctor, but this is executed very differently.
It was executed a lot better, I think, than that was.
Yeah.
And all the bad puns that they put up against the Valyard. I mean, they were funny at the time, but kind of like they kind of threw you off the actual story.
I mean, this was just exploring the fact that, you know, sometimes we're our own worst enemy and you know, and
yes.
sometimes, you know.
Kind of like Mirror Mirror on Star Trek, you know, it's kind of like exploring that, kind of like.
Well, that or what's the one with the transporter incident and there's two Kirks? No, I'm blanking out on the title right now. I'm getting rusty.
Yeah.
907 years old. All right. So how many TARDIS groans would you give it?
Oh, I gave it a 5 TARDIS groans.
Excellent.
Out of 5. I just love this episode so much because it was just so off the beaten track and it was just so unpredictable. And, you know, you never were quite sure how it was going to end up. Like, okay, what was real, what was the reality, or what was the conclusion of it, and what was the whole point of it, and the fact that, was it the Doctor's choice, or was it everybody's choice?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it was just Amy's or the Doctor's. I think it was everybody's choice.
Yeah.
In this one. Where, you know, they all had to choose who they wanted to be with, and everybody chose each other, which I thought was kind of interesting. They said, how could, like Amy went, how could I give up something like this? And Rory was kind of like, at one point, saying the same thing, like, okay, I've been introduced to this, how could I give it up? You kind of think back in, you know, first season, of course we're going back to Rose and Nikki again, but I think this is entirely different because... even though Mickey and Rose were boyfriend and girlfriend, they weren't actually engaged, like, and about to get married. And also, we didn't have that time slip where several years had passed So, but I did like the you blow it up like an elephant type line. Or
yeah, there were a lot of references going back to the pregnancy of Amy.
Yeah.
Yeah, as you come, just finishing off there, it's Taras has put the enemy within. It was the two curves.
Yes, yes.
Oh, that's right. That was enemy within, correct.
Thanks, Ron.
All right. Well, thank you, Helen. We're going to get to others in the queue, but thanks you. Thanks once again.
Okay.
Cheers.
Cheers. Happy anniversary, before I forget.
Yes, this whole year we're celebrating our 25th anniversary for the Gallifreyan Embassy and the 5th anniversary of Dr. Upanchak.
Yep, and the 200th episode.
Yeah, though, well, technically we had our 200 months ago, but yeah, as far as numbered episodes go, yes. Thanks.
Okay.
All right, cheers.
Okay. Cheers.
All right, let's see. Next in the queue, I think, is Mr. Darth. Hello, Darth.
Mr. Skeptical.
Hello.
Greetings and salutations.
Hello. Indeed, indeed. Well, what a fabulous, fabulous episode. I think it's probably the strongest single episode since Midnight. And that, of course, makes it one of the strongest single episodes since the show came back in 2005. Interesting, though, because it's not in the same way as Midnight or maybe even Blink, a standalone kind of excellence, but it's an episode that I think is going to be seen as one that provided a vital link in the development of the characters involved this season. And indeed, this is the point in the season, finally, where I'm like, all right, everything is working. I fully believe in all three of these characters without reservation. For that alone, I think it's been a godsend to me, because I've struggled somewhat with Amy in particular, but here at this point, she is just magnificent, and we see a lot of why she maybe has been rolled out in a very slow way in terms of the fullness and the richness of her character, because she really came into her own, I think, in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
A sublimely written script, really, with tons of great lines, as you've mentioned before. And the concept alone was really good. Now, I have to say, initially, for a 10-second period, I was a little bit disappointed in the ending, because the whole time through, I was really reminded of the Eighth Doctor's first comic strip in Doctor Who magazine, which is called Endgame, which is one in which he goes to the village of Stockbridge, which is a common backdrop in Doctor Who magazine. And there, the Celestial Toy Maker has manipulated the reality of that particular village. And so the whole time through, I'm like, oh, thank God, yes, the Celestial Toy Maker has come back. And I was, like, almost ecstatic, thinking this is how it was going to go. And then when it turned out not to be that, I was briefly disappointed. And then I was like, well, actually, no, this is better, isn't it? Because this is a Freudian analysis of the Doctor's own character, so this is fine. So a fully delightful episode. And I quite agree with James in that it's better to have these low-key kind of aliens instead of necessarily ones that are CGI created. Although, I'm a little bit disagree. I did actually like those fish people last week, but still.
No, I agree as well. In fact, I would go with even lower-key, you know, than they did, but, I mean, it's okay.
Yeah. I mean, it was... And the other thing is, this is a return, and this is what this season is about, really, the return to village English life and how that's impacted by the Doctor. So this is not just throwback, as Dave quite rightly points out, to Inside the Spaceship, or whatever we're calling it this week, Edge of Destruction, but also to things like the Android Invasion, Part 1. Very strong feeling of that, I think, in this episode. Or the demons, mm-hmm. or, you know, pick whatever you want out of the Pertwee era, kind of. So the great, you know, synergy with the mid-70s in this thing, too.
Sure. Well, that was missing his unit.
Kind of, yeah, in a way. And then we're like, oh, yeah, that's great. But also kind of an important episode from a behind-the-scenes perspective, not just because, you know, we have a new writer and we have a new director, but as is the want this particular season, we also have a brand-new director of photography. And again, I'm loving, you know, the DP work this whole season, because it's not the Smallville red and yellows that we were getting by order of Phil Collins and T. throughout the first four series. But instead, it's this beautiful, muted, washed out.
Yeah, the whole village scenes were mostly overcast. You know, I mean, they can't control the weather, so right. But they did the best they could. I thought the bedroom scene where we lose Rory, the lighting in there was very warm and golden. I thought that was a nice touch there.
Exactly. I mean, you actually have the cinematography telling the story in that where it is golden, it is, you know, the ideal of the dream. Where it's not golden, it's, you know, the threat. And the fact that they, I think, quite bravely said, okay, it's raining, we're going to go with the rain. I don't know if that was scripted or not, but there aren't very many episodes of Doctor Who where, I mean, there are a ton of episodes of Doctor Who where it's shot in the rain, but there aren't that many where it's actually shown in the rain. Mm-hmm. Most of the time they digitally wipe it out or whatever, but here it's like, you know, there's full-on rain going. And I love that. I love that that made it scary. And I think Dave's quite right in pointing out that this is probably scarier than our two-parter earlier in the season. Some parts of this really quite freaked me out. And actually, the eye thing freaked me out. The first time I saw it, I was like, it was actually, for me, quite effective CGI because one of the few times in the modern series, I was like, whoa, what's that? But at the same time, I was also quite emotionally wrapped up in this episode because there were points where I literally had to stop myself from either laughing so hard I couldn't hear what was going on or actually starting to cry a little bit. Because all the stuff with Amy making the realization that she loved Rory, that really worked for me. Mm-hmm. And I'm quite excited now to have a proper couple in the TARDIS. I don't know why it's never been done before. There's no reason that it shouldn't have been. But this looks like a great setup for what's left to come in the rest of the series. So, sorry, back slightly to the behind-the-scenes stuff. You not only have a new director of photography again this week, but you also have, for the first time ever in the history of the BBC Wales production, Edward Thomas, not the production designer, which I was totally shocked about because he's clearly not left the series or whatever. I knew he had handed over his responsibilities on the Sarah Jane Adventures, but to find that Tristan Peatfield was suddenly up on the line. I mean, Tristan Peatfield, he's been a production designer for a number of other series, most notably Bill for the last 6 years. But to find him, of all people, to get the nod to be production designer on an episode was a little surprising to me because he's not got that big a track record on Doctor Who itself. I would have thought it would have been somebody else to come to the fore, like Stephen Nicholas, who's, you know, been the supervising art director forever and ever. You know, that was exciting. So a lot of interesting stuff going on behind the scenes as well as in front, and overall just a triumphant success. Mm-hmm. So definite five for me.
Fantastic. All right, thank you, Darth.
All righty.
All right, I'm going to get to as many people in the queue. We only have a few minutes left, so thanks again.
Yep.
Cheers. And I believe this is Liam is next. Hello, Liam.
Hello.
How are you doing?
Good.
So what did you think of this episode?
I thought it was pretty good, but I could tell that they were trying to make it a little bit scary, but that didn't really work out to me.
Mm-hmm. What, but the whole...
But
the aliens being the old people, is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. Well, that and based on most scare factors on TV, I am pretty tough, too, about it. But not with
takes a lot to scare you.
Yeah. None of the Weeping Angel stories ever did.
So if you were to give word to Doctor Who, what would you tell them to do to be scary?
I don't know.
All right.
I only pretty much have one fear, and that's arachnids.
Okay.
Anything that's crawling and has six or more eyes. I thought it was okay, and I like how the doctor always refers to Rory as little hand motion for the pointy nose.
Yeah.
It's funny. Did anybody see The Confidential?
Yes.
I sort of liked Amy's little bump dance that she
It was
invented.
Creepy, wasn't it?
Sort of. And it turns out that they didn't even need the stunt double for the old lady.
Yeah, he accidentally hit her with the...
Oh, he was allowed to hit hard?
Well, luckily it was a breakaway. It was a breakaway prop.
Yeah, I know. But he was told that he was allowed to actually hit it hard. Oh, I lost my train of thought. Oh, what was I going to say?
Do you want to give a rating and then perhaps Lewis can get one more on?
I'd say about the 4.5 psychic dust bags.
Okay.
Out of 5.
All right. Well, thank you, Liam. And tell your father we said hi.
Yeah, please
Yay.
Do.
All right. Cheers.
Bye.
Ta-ra.
All right. And speaking of Ta-ra, it's Taras. Hi, Taras. I'm sorry.
Hello.
I think last time we didn't get a chance. You had to run off to the meetup, I think, last time.
Well, as do we all.
Yeah.
I thought this was a very cerebral episode, very well done, exploring the motivations of all three of the TARDIS crew. And it's very interesting how we have what is apparently a conflict between Rory's and the Doctor's dream worlds, but if you really take a look at it, both worlds were created by the Doctor's hallucination. So I tend to think that it's more of in line of the story that we had from the end of Flesh and Stone, where we had that last scene where the Doctor needs to sort Amy out, and I think he believes that getting Amy and Rory together is what will resolve what seems to be what's being pointed to as this problem with the crack in the end of the universe, or whatever they're referring to it as. As we saw at the end, they were pointing to the date, which was the date of Rory and Amy's marriage, and we have like references to them putting off that day as far as possible, so that could have something to play with later in the series.
Mm-hmm. I know you don't do TARDIS groans, so but you.
Well, I thought this was an amazing episode. It's like it started out so slowly, and it's like lulled one into like a sense of complacency, and then it just went into this beautiful mind play that it just played on the minds of the characters and the viewers. It was very well done. Simon and I did a very good job on this script.
Thank you, Tras. Are you heading over to the McCoy event tonight?
Yes, I am.
All right. So
yes, I am.
Catch you there later. I'm going to have to jump on a train after this, so see you in a bit.
Okay.
All right.
All right.
Thank you, Taras.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Cheers, Taras.
Just a quick note from Ken. He gave it 3 out of 5 TARDIS groans, saying that he's not big on these celestial toy maker type of stories. So he's looking forward to next week's, though. All right. Well, if we can, I know Russell's in the queue. If we can do Russell very quickly, just 1 minute, Russell. Hey, Russell.
And wow, a minute, I feel like I'm on the weakest link now. I thought it was a really interesting episode. I thought the whole omnipotent kind of, you know, kind of celestial toy maker kind of thing was kind of neat done. And the eyes and the mouth were uber creepy. I thought Amy's behavior in this episode was kind of harsh. I really felt sorry for poor Rory. You know, here he's getting ready to marry this girl. This guy sweeps in out of nowhere and is, like, taking away his affection, you know, the affections of his fiance. And I kind of felt pity for the poor guy because, you know, the doctor's just clueless on this. Mm-hmm. Like, not my fault. And she's just behaving badly up to a certain point in this episode. I don't think they really painted her into a good light until he finally dies and she goes, oh, darn, I really cared for him. I thought that wasn't the most flattering portrayal of Amy, really. It kind of showed her as a little shallow.
Well, it took his death for her to realize what was important.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's sad that it took that to happen for her to clue in. And I'm not completely convinced that she's, you know, I need a few more episodes of them working together before I'm convinced he's totally over the Doctor and totally in Camp Rory. Talk about a girl waffling. Oh, my goodness. That seemed to be a really big focus of the episode to me.
Well, and we're mid-series right now, so that can be developed. So how I am going to have to rush you off because I do have to catch a train. How many TARDIS groans would you give it?
I'm only going to give this one a 3.5. Really, could have been better.
Okay.
I'm looking forward to next week with the big sucking through the earth. That looks to be a more exciting story than
And Silurians as well.
Yeah, and then old school Doctor Who villain. So.
What's not like?
Action show. Yeah.
All right. What's
not
like?
Congratulations on, I hear your episode, you were on episode 200 on your show, so congratulations to you on that.
Yes, yeah, so congratulations to you. We've joined the 200th club. I'm only in 4th year, so let's see if we can crank out another 200. That'd be something.
All right.
Indeed.
Okay, so we're going to have to wrap things up here. But thank you so much.
Again, I owe my thanks to James for getting me started in podcasting. So thank you, James.
No problem. Thanks, mate.
All right. Cheers. No
problem. Cheers.
Bye.
All right, and if you weren't able to get yourself in this show, send it to us at record your feedback and send it to feedback@podshock.net or call a public call box. Go to our website, gallifreyandmissy.org or podshock.net, and click the feedback button on the top for ways to send feedback. Anyway, I'm gonna wrap things up here. Unfortunately, I need to scoot off and get ready and catch a train. Hopefully, The train station in my town is shut down this weekend because they're doing construction, so I have to drive to the next town to take the train. A lot of fun. Anyway.
Great. Fun times. Well, have a nice time, mate.
Thanks.
Yep. And thanks, everyone.
Yes, we'll see you here next time, back at our usual time, and we'll be reviewing episode 8 of the new series. Cheers, everyone.
Yeah. Cheers.
Bye.
Bye.
But wait, we have more to say about Amy's choice.
This is a dream. Definitely this one. No, if we die here, we wake up, yeah?
Unless we just die.
Either way, this is my only chance of seeing him again. This is a dream.
How do you know?
Because if this is real life, I don't want it. I love Rory, and I never told him. But now he's gone.
So, you chose this world. Well done. You got it right. And with only seconds left, fair's fair, let's warm you up.
I hope you've enjoyed your little fictions. It all came out of your imagination, so I'll leave you to ponder on that.
What happened to me?
I...
Oh, right. This is good.
What are we doing now?
Me? I'm going to blow up the TARDIS.
What? Notice how helpful the Dream Lord was. Okay, there was misinformation, red herrings, but he was always very keen to make us choose between dream and reality.
What are you doing?
Doctor, the Dream Lord conceded this isn't the dream.
Yes, it is!
Start burning coal. Do me a favor. The Dream Lord has no power over the real world. He was offering us a choice between two dreams.
How do you know that?
Because I know who he is.
What's that?
A speck of psychic pollen from the candle meadows of Krast-on-Slava. Must have been hanging around for ages. Fell in the time rotor, heated up, and induced a dream state for all of us.
So that was the Dream Lord, then? Those little specks?
No. The Dream Lord was me. Psychic pollen, it's a mind parasite. It feeds on everything dark in you. Gives it a voice, turns it against you.
What I don't get is, you blew up the TARDIS, that stopped that dream, but what stopped the Lebworth dream?
We crashed the camper van.
Oh, right. I don't remember that bit.
No, you weren't there. You were already...
Already what?
Dead. You died in that dream. Mrs. Pocket got you.
Where now?
Anywhere's good for me. Amy's choice.
Ah!
hear more from the Doctor Who Podshock Public Call Box, because if you can't get into the live show, you can always call the Podshock Public Call Box at 206-600-6517. Alternatively, you can also leave us feedback on Skype using the screen name Podshock. Though I have to say, Skype's feedback voicemail, even though we are paying for it, doesn't always work. Skype. So, coming in through the Doctor Who Podshock Public Call Box is once again Brent from North Carolina.
Hey guys, this is Brent from Raleigh again, calling in about Amy's Choice. Real quickly, it was really a good episode, I thought. To me, pretty much every episode this year has been really great. It's awesome. There hasn't been a bad one yet, in my opinion. Well, to me, Victory of the Daleks was a little slow, but they've all been really great, and this one was really cool because it was different. It was really surreal and had a good story to it. To me, though, just to be a little nitpicky, it wasn't really convincing that the village part was real. It was really obvious to me that the TARDIS was real, but then at the end, you find out that they were both dreams, which that kind of threw me. I didn't expect that. Didn't see that coming. I just thought it was really good. And then the very end with the whole, they're supposed to be in reality, and he still sees the reflection and the kind of the dreamy smoke behind him or whatever. And it reminded me of back during Trial of a Time Lord, where the Doctor was in the Matrix, and then he was in the Matrix, and then he was in the Matrix. And then at the end, the guy that held the key turned around, and it was the Valyard, and you didn't know if he was still in the Matrix. And there were big debates going on, are all the following seasons going to be in the Matrix? So it kind of reminded me of that whole thing. Anyway, I thought it was a really, really good episode. Looking forward to next week. Really, really, really good. They showed the preview at the end, and I told my kid, to watch out. So we're going to have to go back and watch a couple of old episodes so you'll know what's going on next week. I don't want to give anything away if it hasn't been already. So anyway, see you guys later. Thanks.
Yes, thank you, Brent. And it's interesting to note that for next week, which is we'll be returning to our regular schedule at 5 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time for our live show, which we'll be reviewing The Hungry Earth, which Brent alluded to may have a returning, well, I don't want to say villain, but a returning creature, a returning race that we've seen many, many years ago. So it's going to be interesting if you want to catch up on it. There's a couple John Pertwee stories and a Peter Davison story to check out. Well, there's a DVD box set that you may want to check out. It's called Doctor Who Beneath the Surface. So it wouldn't hurt if you had checked this box set out before watching next week's episode, but it's not a prerequisite, I'm sure. So also coming in on the Doctor Who Podshock Public Call Box is Perry with his thoughts about the new series and Amy's Choice.
Hi, guys. This is Perry in Birmingham, Alabama, calling you back. Hopefully this one is the right number. Anyway, I had a couple of comments that I wanted to say. I haven't been able to call in really with any of the shows recently, but I wanted to say that this series with Matt Smith, I think, has been really great. It's had, a lot of ups and very few downs for me. I think the lowest parts of the season so far, for me, in my mind anyway, have to be Victory of the Daleks and Amy's Choice, and I think Amy's Choice being a little bit better than Victory of the Daleks. I would give Amy's Choice probably about a 3.5 or so out of 5 myself, where I've given most of the other episodes a 4 or 5. The other thing I wanted to say, it has to do with these quote-unquote continuity errors that people have been pointing out, kind of like in Flesh and Stone with the Doctor's tweed jacket suddenly appearing on him when he says this sort of cryptic thing to Amy about what she has to remember from when she was 7 or 8 years old. What I wanted to point out was that, and I haven't heard a lot of discussion about this, but as most people probably know, Stephen, at least the Brits will know, Stephen Moffat was the creator and writer for this adult series called Coupling, which I used to think of it as the British version of Friends, but it's much, much better. And I love Coupling, but it's very adult. It's not for everybody in the Doctor Who audience, certainly not the younger viewers. But anybody who watches Coupling knows that Stephen Moffat is very good with the wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey stuff. In fact, he invented the term in Blink, right? But there are several of those types of episodes in Coupling. Ones I can think of off the top of my head, some of my favorite episodes of Coupling, there's this one called Split, which actually follows, it actually has a split screen and follows two sets of characters time shifted from each other over, like, one half of the screen is taking place like 3 hours before the other half of the screen, and it's really funny what happens. There's another one that's called the Girl with Two Breasts, and or The Woman with Two Breasts, and which is also has some of that sort of aspect to it. And again, these are adult things, so if there are any kids listening, you shouldn't be watching it. But they're really funny, and they really demonstrate his attention to detail. And what I really think is going to happen in the end of this series, in the oops, that might be a spoiler. In the title, that's the title too. You know, one of the penultimate episode that was released recently. But I what I'm trying to say is I think what we're going to see in the series finale is the Doctor, again, in a different timeline, you know, going back through some of these events. And I really think that'll happen. And I think series like Coupling really show that Stephen Moffat is skilled at that kind of attention to detail in his writing. Anyway, that's all I had to say. And thanks for having me on the show, if this feedback makes it on the show. And I'll be talking to you later. Bye.
Well, thank you so much, Perry. I'm glad that we finally got that piece of feedback from you. I know you had sent another voicemail in, which for some reason got lost in the time vortex. Maybe we'll get it, you know, a couple months from now, or that whole timey-wimey, wibbly-wobbly thing, which you make a good point. I know we discussed this to some degree on our review show of Flesh and Stone, and it's very possible, you know, as you said, Stephen Moffat has been known to do this, and we've had some discussions about his when he was called out on the 11th hour, as far as the continuity errors, and speaking of Rory's badge in there saying 1990 on it and how it didn't all fit in and all that. I know he basically just excused it all as, you know, basically time ripples from the Time War or something to that effect while he was appearing at the Apple store along with Matt Smith and Karen Gillan. But who knows, he may just been trying to not to spoil the ending here of this series, which promises to be amazing. So, yeah, I think it's going to be, I wouldn't be surprised if we see this, what you just described. We've seen it in the past, and we may see it in the future. So, rounding out our feedback for Amy's Choice is Andy Robertson, who sent this feedback in through just regular email, and I'm going to ask our friend here, Chameleon, to read it back to you.
Hi, this is Andy Robinson from the UK, just putting in a couple of words about last week's episode of Doctor Who, Amy's Choice. I think it was a good story for Matt Smith as the Doctor, but there were times in the story when it reminded me of Night of the Living Dead, the movie. Because when the old people were going after everyone, then trying to get in the house, I like the bit when Amy was complaining saying that she about to give birth, Rory is painizing, then a couple of seconds later she's fine eating ice cream. That made me laugh along. So overall, I would give it 3 out of 5 TARDIS groans. Cheers, Andy Robinson.
And thank you, Andy. Yes, it was a bit of a Night of the Living Dead there with the elderly aliens roaming this town. And I know I made a comparison to Invasion of the Body Snatchers in the live show. You can make several comparisons to past stuff. I know Darth Skeptical made some comparisons that are worthy as well from the 1970s Doctor Who stories. So I want to thank everyone for their feedback. And I'm talking about Amy's Choice here. It was a good episode, and some people thought it was maybe a great episode. Some just thought it was a good episode, and I don't think anyone was really, really disappointed with it. So it's either the ratings have been either middle of the road or right up there. An interesting episode, nonetheless, and we're looking forward to next week when we review The Hungry Earth. That's, again, we're reviewing that on Sunday at 5 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Hopefully you can join us. If not, be sure to send us your feedback using either our Doctor Who Podshock public call box or our email, feedback@podshock.net. Best to go to our website, thegallifreyanimacy.org or podshock.net, and click the feedback button on the top there. Not only that, but we have news and features and lively forums there on our website that you can take part in. There's a whole thread about reviewing each episode. So if you want to chime in there with other viewers and fans that are reviewing each episode, it's there on our site, gallifreyanimacy.org or podshock.net. If you can join us during our live show, please let us know if you're a Doctor Who Podshock supporting subscriber, as we will bump you up in the queue so you can get on the show. Just one way for us to show our appreciation for those that are supporting us. For a low monthly subscription fee, as a show support, not only will you be helping us continue and grow the show, but you'll get some extra content as well. In fact, we should be putting out a new extra episode this week, hopefully before the next live show. To become a Podshock supporting subscriber, simply go to gallifreyanimacy.org or podshock.net and click on the banner ad that says, "Become a Doctor Who Podshock supporting subscriber." And if you're already a Podshock supporting subscriber, thank you for your continued support. We couldn't do this show without you. Before we close the show, just a reminder about Thursday, Doctor Who Podshock will be appearing at Fiddlesticks Pub and Grill at 7 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time in New York City. That's 56 Greenwich Avenue, New York, New York. We are going to be there for the launch party of the Mythological Dimensions of Doctor Who book. For more information about that, go to thegallifreyanimacy.org or podshock.net. It's on our front page currently. You can also follow us on Twitter. Yes, you can follow Doctor Who Podshock itself, the show, on Twitter at twitter.com/podshock. You can follow James Norton at twitter.com/JamesNorton. And you can follow Dave A.C. Cooper, or just Dave Cooper, at twitter.com/DaveAC. And, of course, you can always follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/LouisTrapani. That's L-O-U-I-S. So I think that does it for this show. Thank you, everyone. And thanks, James and Dave, for helping out with the live show. We'll be back next time. Cheers, everyone. You have been listening to Doctor Who Podshock, presented by the fan-run GallifreyanEmbassy.org. Doctor Who is owned and trademarked by the BBC. Doctor Who Podshock is not affiliated with the BBC in any way. Come back next time for another exciting and informative episode of Doctor Who Podshock. Doctor Who Podshock theme music by Jeff Smith at thejeffsmith.com. This has been a production of Art Trap Productions and is presented to you by the Gallifreyan Embassy and has been made possible in part by supporting subscribers and donations from listeners like you.